broke the rules. He went to the above world.
A man was drowning. I had to save him.
This obsession with humans has to stop.
I just want to know more about them.
Ariel! Don't!
Poor child.
I can help you. You can't live in that world unless you become a human yourself.
Is that even possible?
It's what I live for.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got crazy!
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen!
It's showtime.
That's fun.
Welcome back, Man Fam. Hope you're having a great summer out there and enjoying the summer movie season. I know we are. Plenty of movies to talk about coming up here and that we've already talked about. So make sure you're checking out the past few weeks. We've talked Guardians. We're going to be talking Indiana Jones here pretty soon. So all the big summer movies of 2023 will be talked about here on Mad About Movies on the main feed. But we have a throwback feed, VIP, Patreon feed as well. If you want to make sure we keep doing podcasts, that's the best way to support us. People ask us, can we donate, buy a shirt? Well, really the best way to do that is to get something in return for yourself, which is more episodes. So madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP, get you those more episodes. It's going to be a good one this week, fellas, because we're talking Godzilla 1998, one of the worst movies of all time. We're talking all-time flops in the VIP this week, this year. That's a theme. So Godzilla 1998 is the topic for the feed this week there. madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Get you access. Fellas, good to be back here. Where should we begin? With The Little Mermaid, the Disney remake version. Brian, I know you went to the theater for this. Did you have to roll solo or was the kid down for it?
Well, my wife was really excited to see this one.
Okay.
My wife, and I'm gonna bring it back. I'm gonna keep going. Cooper was not real interested, and it was like, well, my parents were out of town, Lindsay's mom was out of town, his best friend that he spends a lot of time with, they were out of town. I was like, I'm sorry to tell you you're coming to see the movie. Like, I don't know, you know. We're the mean parents that are dragging you to a movie. Wow, total jerks.
Wow,
here.
Abusive.
We're super woke, the two of us, you know. So anyway, we all went to see it together. I think he had a good time with it. Lindsay really loved it. Really enjoyed it. Packed theater, that was cool. I feel like even Fast X wasn't a packed theater for me. I think for us, Kent, it felt like it was maybe more than halfway full, but not totally full. The three of us went to see it and had a pretty good time with it.
Awesome. Well, it certainly has families in mind and, pretty good performance at the box office last weekend. Let's start there. Let's compare and contrast The Little Mermaid to a few of the other live action remakes of recent past by Disney. So this one made $95 million in the opening week, 3 days. But I think 118 in the over the course of Memorial Day weekend, so like through Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So let's round that out. Let's say 105, right? Something like that. Okay.
Sure.
The last one that came out, believe it or not, was Cruella. I know the reputation has been that they just keep cranking these out, but. Yeah, they are. I mean, a few of these have been put on Disney Plus, and we had Peter Pan, we had Pinocchio kind of stashed on Disney Plus. But when I went back and looked at it, they hadn't released these nearly to the amount that I had thought in my mind.
Sure.
I thought they were putting one of these out every 6 months, and has not been the case at all. So I guess defend Disney a little bit for not putting as many of these out as they possibly could. So the last one was Cruella in 2021. Didn't do great, obviously. For $20 million opening weekend. And then Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, was in 2019. And it did $30 million opening weekend. So that one did not catch on. But earlier that summer, The Lion King, 191 in 2019. So basically double what The Little Mermaid pulled in.
Crazy. Yeah.
That surprises me. Because I thought The Little Mermaid had just as much, if not more, appeal than The Lion King. I am wrong. And then Aladdin is probably the most comparable one in terms of the trajectory that it's going. Because in its opening weekend, it pulled in 91. So this one, 95. I think this will probably have a little bit better legs, better word of mouth than Aladdin did. But it's almost dead on with where Aladdin was through right now. And Aladdin, at the end of the day, ended up making $1 billion worldwide. Basically, right on the nose.
Yeah.
$700 million of that was from international with Aladdin. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. This will have the international pull that one did. But wow. So this is on track for a bill. Not on track for the Lion King numbers, though. And I was thinking this might have had Lion King potential. And then Beauty and the Beast, I think this might be most comparable to, I don't know, IP around the same time. Comparable story, all that kind of stuff. Came out in 2017. It did 174 opening weekend. So way more than this still. Mm-hmm. But there's a little comparison for you, Brian, as I pass it off to you for some general thoughts, takes, and reaction to those numbers.
You know, these movies, there are some really good things about this movie, I felt like. And I thought it did some interesting things, and there's a cultural conversation here that's really important too, which is great, and I thought it did a great job with that stuff. These movies, I think maybe more than any other, make me feel like a movie critic snob, curmudgeon kind of person. It's because the deal is these all do really well and we don't really like any of them. And I think for me, it's maybe especially me, I mean, I love blockbuster movies and I think I have pretty broad taste. When it comes to it's there's not too much that, like, you almost have to go out of your way, I think, at this point to make like a blockbustery broad movie for me just be like, this is terrible. And so almost all these movies, we see them, and I think our general reaction, I mean, I'll spoiler alert, I like this one more than most of the others in this run. But even still, like, I see him, and then we generally are kind of like, meh, not really, I don't really dig this, or what's the point, or whatever else, and we talk about it, and we don't really dig it. And then, like, every single person in my normal life is like, I saw The Lion King and I freaking loved it, you know? And then I have to be like, oh, yeah, cool. Or if they ask me what I think, then I'm like, you know, it's fine. It wasn't really my, you know, because I don't like to be, I don't want to be movie snob guy ever. And you guys, I think, are generally in the same boat.
No, I relish it.
Yeah. If someone brings up my back piece. Cards. Yeah. It says movie snob in old English.
Mine,
your pinkies out. Yeah. On your
if someone out, tells me they like The Lion King, I take my brandy snifter that I always have on me and my cane, and I beat the crap out of them with both.
Monocle.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Got to keep that cane.
I always
handy.
Have a brandy snifter. For those that haven't seen me in the real world, I'm just.
I know what you're saying, Brian, in the fact that, like, these aren't offensively bad movies, but the industry side of us, the critic side of us, knows that these are so cash grabby that we can't help but know that.
The thing is, like, they are cash grabby, but they're, you know what? I would walk that back even. They are designed to make lots of money, and they do that very, very well. You know, as much crap as we give The Lion King, and I think rightfully so, like, I think part of the issue with The Lion King is the ambition of it.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to say about a movie that we typically would group in with cash grabs. And, you know, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, maybe a little bit different. I don't know. Beauty and the Beast has a central problem, and it's just that the lead is rough. I mean, Emma Watson's just not very charismatic, and especially in that role. And Aladdin, to me, I think is like maybe the worst one in terms of like feeling like a cash grab, because it's just like, well, we got Will Smith, and then that's kind of, you know, that's all we're really doing here. But these do make a ton of money, and that money does pay for other movies that get made. And more to the point, there's a wide section of the movie going audience that this is I mean, it's got a, this movie has a 95% audience score. When I pass it off to y'all, I'll look up and see what some of those others were on Rotten Tomatoes audience score. I mean, it's doing its job. All of these movies are doing their jobs. I try to keep that in mind with most movies, but these ones in particular, I've gotten to where I'm more willing to give them a pass than I was previously. And I'm sure someone's like, because it's Disney and not DC or Warner Brothers or whatever. And then I don't know, maybe there's some truth to that, but really I think it's more that just my wife loved this movie. Everyone in our theater seemed to really love this movie. Every person who's going to be in my normal life over the next couple of weeks is, that sees this is going to say, man, I really love the Little Mermaid. And I don't know. Sometimes I just have to feel it. I feel like, okay, maybe we're just wrong. And that's okay, because I don't mind being wrong. Like I always say, we're going to give you our real opinion on things. These movies are maybe just not quite made for us, and that's okay. There's still criticisms that we, you know, I have that I think we can levy at this, but overall, it's just my whole thesis there that I've been going on for an hour is just there aren't a lot of big, broad movies that make me feel like movie snob, curmudgeon guy, and these kind of represent those to me. I don't think I'm ever going to enjoy them as much as broad audiences do. And I don't really love that, if I'm being honest, but it's just kind of the truth of it.
Yeah. They don't have the, I don't know the term I should use, nerddom that, I don't know, a lot of blockbusters have, even Fast and, mm-hmm. and Marvel, they all have kind of a core nerd fan base that mm-hmm. you can kind of latch onto. These kind of do, but like, the least offensive kind of movie you could make would be something like this, in my opinion. And I know there's people that are offended by this, and I can't get over that, and that's a different discussion, you know?
Yeah,
but like,
for sure. Yeah.
To me, this is the least risky thing you could do at Disney. And talking to your point of like, these are designed to make money, absolutely they are. I saw a stat last week that said I have it right here. Disney spends $10 billion a year on their parks, just keeping them open and paying the bills, $10 billion. And so if you split that up per day, that's $3.5 million per day per park that they have to spend. There's some aspects of their business that's like, okay, some of this is solely to make money, and that's fine.
Right.
You know, this is an example of that, and that's totally fine with me. Doesn't take risks. It doesn't change the source material in any kind of particular way. You know, it's a super easy remake of a easy, successful property, right? But Disney has so many aspects of their business that take risks. Walt Disney Pictures is honestly a small part of it. And they need to keep the mouse cranking. They need to keep the brand alive somehow, some way.
Right.
And this is the way they do it. You know, it's fine. Sure.
Yeah. I think, look, I mean, not only is it okay that they do it, as a publicly traded company, they have a fiduciary responsibility to do that.
Right.
And all of that feeds, that's where this gets cloudy, right? When you have a creative enterprise, that's also a, capitalistic enterprise. And then you have, yes, all those parks things, but these are the feeder mechanism it's all a funnel, right? Top of funnel is Walt Disney Pictures, and you know, end of funnel is the like whatever Little Mermaid churro that you get at, and all the steps along the way that get you to that park to spend that, you know, $1,500 is part of that. But like, I would argue that they have the ultimate nerd fan base and loyal fan base in children. Over like Fast and Furious and something like they don't have like the niche nerd fan base or whatever, but like these have the ultimate like loyal new to this fan base in like everyone that's or 80% of kids that are under 10 are like interested in most of the stuff that they're doing on this product line. I'm not one of those people. I actually didn't especially enjoy this movie whatsoever, but I get it. Like they have to. They like, if I was a Disney shareholder, I would just be constantly, as long as these are making $1 billion.
Right.
Like we have the rights to this. Yeah. We have to do this. And again, like not everyone is, right? Most people are paying customers interested in, you know, creative and innovative filmmaking and all that. So it gets complicated. Like, this is Disney's what? I don't know. I don't know what the Fortune rankings are, but they can't be too far down that list. So, like, they, like, have to do this in some ways. Right. And it kind of sucks on some level sometimes. And sometimes you have that awesome alignment where those things work. Like, you make something cynically, not necessarily cynically, you make something with profit in mind. Whether that comes right off the movie, to Ken's point, or to the parks later on. All that to say, like, sometimes you do all that for all those reasons, and you make something really cool that has this great mass appeal and is thrilling to the world at large. And sometimes, so, like, I get why they do it. It's just, it's a really murky thing to navigate. And I do think we do forget a lot that they're publicly traded, like, that they kind of, I don't know, they have to get the most out of the IP that they own in every way.
And they get a lot of crap for not having, like, original successful things recently.
Sure.
They've had a lot of really new, like, Encanto is huge. Frozen is huge, yeah, you know? I mean, I think they're still cranking out original new stuff. It's just not, I mean, eventually they're going to run out of these to remake. I mean, they're already remaking Lilo and Stitch. They announced very soon Moana is coming. So, like, they're running out of prime Disney animated movies to remake. And then what's the go-to strategy for making money? The digital eye release. I don't know.
And, you know, to defend them a bit, like, you know, whatever, four movies, original movies came out this week. And they all bombed. Like,
totally.
So, you know, is Disney kind of at fault for part of that? Sure, on some level, right? When they kind of, you know, that's where it becomes this. But it is this holistic thing, whereas if this is the environment and this is what, you know, you can do Little Mermaid for $200 million and make $1 billion, and versus, you know, you spend $20 million on some new original idea and make three, you know, companies are going to continue to spend to the Little Mermaid route until they, you know, the Marvel drip has dried up a bit lately. But until the market really pushes back, they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, that it's a weird deal because I mean, that's a great point about all the original movies, Richard, because I think we want that. I mean, I want to have more movies that aren't $200 million franchise entries and stuff. A lot of those movies get pushed to Netflix or Amazon or wherever else. I would like to have more of those things happen, but also, like when we were doing the movie draft, getting ready for that, I looked at all these and I was happy to see so many original movies on the slate. And there are actually quite a few, especially early summer and late summer, you know, more often than not, June and July, that's you know, hardly anything that's original, but there were a lot of May and August original movies, even April. And they all look terrible. Like, I looked at all of them. I was like, oh, that looks terrible. Like, oof, well, I don't know about that. And so, yeah, this is in large part Disney's fault and maybe to a slightly lesser extent the other big studios and stuff. But
it's also the audience's fault for spending where to put their money. And it's like 100%. TV's fault and streaming's fault because, you know, we're in this. I mean, what is a movie even? Like, what justifies being a movie at this point? We've talked about this on the show before. So, like, there's all these complicating factors for sure. Yeah.
It's just an interesting spot. Like, I would like, in the old days, really even 10 years ago, if you make a huge blockbuster movie, part of the, I mean, that was like the Sony business model was like every Spider-Man movie we make, that's paying for three or four other, you know, sort of mid-budget movies for adults and stuff. So I would like for, I think something Disney could do that would help in terms of their perception, although it would be essentially setting money on fire probably, given how things go with the original. But I think that they would be wise to take that short-term loss to say, hey, The Little Mermaid's paying for these four original movies, and three of them are going to be directed by people of color or women or whatever else. And, like, we are investing some of the money that we are getting on these huge movies into new and upcoming voices in filmmaking. And sort of trying to revive that mid-budget mm-hmm. kind of thing. I think that would be a smart, it'd be a smart PR move. I don't know that it would be a smart business move. So yeah. that's, you know, that's the thing. But yes, in a perfect world, as we try to blend art with consumerism and capitalism and whatnot, like, it would be great if you could A, spend some of that profit to make something that is not a huge bajillion-dollar movie that is only designed to make money or mostly designed to make money, number one. And number two, if those movies that you do make in that world could have a little bit more ambition and attempt at real quality. I think this, to bring it back to The Little Mermaid, I think this movie goes about halfway in that direction, personally, but it's not, it's maybe not enough. Yeah. I would love to, I just think we live in a world now and where you can make a big budget, huge movie that is designed to make money that is also very good. And we've seen that done. We've seen that done within the Disney apparatus many times over the 10 years of this podcast. And we've seen it done outside of the Disney apparatus. And so for these ones to, I think, relatively consistently kind of miss that mark is an odd mm-hmm. and a little bit frustrating to deal with and to go through. And to your point, just to wrap it up, I think part of the reason why we feel like these come out constantly, Kent, is because Aladdin and the Lion King came out like 2 months apart.
And Dumbo.
And that, yeah. Yeah, and that really just felt like, oh my gosh, can we get a break from this? And then in reality, we have.
And it's because the uproar is so severe every time one's announced that it feels like it's 100%. Like 6 months of like people arguing online about
for
it.
For sure.
Before for sure. it comes out. And every trailer drops, it's like a new...
And we think about...
Putting stoke in the fire, you know, so...
Mm-hmm. We think about them in relation to other... You know, film studios, entertainment companies, all of that. And we like relate Disney to, you know, these different ones. What can they be doing to drive this industry? And it's true. I mean, a lot of that, they, as the leader of that industry, especially as they continue to consolidate by like buying up any potential competitor, they have a responsibility to do so. But also, like, I'm looking at right now, they're 53rd on the Fortune 500. Like, around them is Albertsons, Prudential. Energy Transfer, which is Pipelines, and Lockheed Martin. Like, they also have to think like those companies too, you know? And so,
exactly.
Like, it's, it gets really messy.
They have, well, to Brian's point, we'll see where they put their money. I mean, if a lot of great Fox Searchlight projects come out in the next few years, then we'll know why, sure. you know? I think they have avenues now to put out some interesting stuff, and it's just not going to be Walt Disney Pictures all the time. They've made some really bad ones for like Disney Plus, though, that have gone put on there, not promoted. That's just like, how were they ever even paying money for this? One of the main takeaways for me with this remake, 2 hours, guys. If the goal is to make money, do they not know that every minute that they... extend this thing costs like tens of millions of dollars to produce. Wouldn't you think it would be like, we need to make this thing 90 minutes?
Well, and like churn that theater around. Like, if they were really thinking purely capitalistically, which we kind of assume at least is a big weight of this, right? When you're remaking these, this kind of IP. Yeah. I would be like, cool. Well, how many times can we turn that Cinemark number 13 around and why isn't it 90 minutes? Like, can you show me on a spreadsheet and justify the extra 45 minutes when I'm going to lose 3 screenings a day or whatever that equals? Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand why in the, you know, initial meeting, they just are so insistent on like, we need to extend this story out. We need to make this world. No one is going to these to see like the world extended beyond anything that they expect. I can't.
I will. I'm not going to push back on that concept. I will say this. I went back and rewatched the 89 Little Mermaid yesterday while I was working on stuff. It feels like the most rushed 90-minute movie of all time. Like, it is. I don't even know if I would say it's flying. It's just like, wait, hold on. We're already like, I hadn't seen that movie in so long. Maybe not as like. Certainly not in the the Mad About Movies era, as we like to call it. It's been a really long time. It was so rushed and the pacing was so wheels off. Like, I can see, not necessarily we need to drag this thing out by any means, but like, I can see the sitting down and saying, all right, guys, we're making The Little Mermaid. What are your, you know, what are your initial thoughts on what we need to do here? And someone says, guys, that movie feels so rushed. We gotta space it out a little bit. We gotta have some pacing here. Now, again, you probably would like to find ways to do that within an hour 30, hour 40, instead of pushing it out to 2 hours plus. You know, like maybe we cut a scene here, could do something a little bit different there, or just hire a director who actually knows what he's doing instead of Rob Marshall. But I felt that exact same way coming out of the movie in the theaters. And then when I went back and rewatched the original one, I was like, gosh, I think I'm glad that they stretched it out a little bit, because this feels so, so quickly, poorly paced.
I just thought, I thought the last act was so dragged so hard. And then when the Scuttlebutt song came on, that was terrorism. That was the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Guys, did you know Awkwafina was a rapper? We need to get that. We need to let people know that again. That was so bad. So yeah. I guess I'm okay with extending a movie out if it's good. Maybe it was because it was so bad. The guy that played King Eric couldn't sing at all.
He was a buzz.
I mean, was that not part of the audition, singing in this movie? I'm with you, Brian. Disney learned their lesson on Beauty and the Beast. Like, okay, we can't cast people that can't sing anymore when it's such a singing heavy. So, you know, obviously Halle Bailey, not Chloe, she has a great voice. I thought she was fantastic with the songs. And Rachel Zegler's in the next Snow White. She's fantastic. Sure. So it feels like they've learned their lessons. Like, we need great singers in these to carry them. And regardless of what they look like, whether they fit the anime, people being offended that they don't look like an animated character is so funny to me.
It's like the it's the animation most insane level of online ridiculousness. I just oh my god.
But guys, also mermaids don't exist. You know that too. They never did either. It's all fake too.
Sarah's been watching some Netflix documentary about mer people that it's kind of like furries, you know?
Oh, okay.
I thought Ariel was great, but I mean, I had the same problem with the Lion King of the side characters just being generic animals.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Cause I mean, as a kid, I would have loved it if you had told me, oh, Kent, they're making Peter Pan in live action. Kent, they're making Little Mermaid in live action. I would have been all in. I'd be like, I need it, right? Is it worth the trade-off of losing basically what makes the animated movies good, which emotion? Is personality?
Yeah, I know.
Right? Is it worth the trade-off of personality to see a real fish swimming around?
Exactly. And that, like, when you watch those old cartoons, I watched Little Mermaid recently too, and it's like that like Flounder emotes so much, like cartoonishly. Right. So see what I did there? There's a reason that's an expression, and like, it's so funny to just drop. It's crazy how much their faces move to express everything in that style, and then just to not have it.
I thought Sebastian was fine, but Flounder was did you see the memes going around about like the character posters? That was just like a random fish, and it was like Joe, the Little Mermaid, you know? It's like,
we had to get you gotta get Tremblay apart though, you know? You gotta let Jacob Tremblay cook.
Tremblay is how old do you think he is? Don't look this up.
Oh gosh.
Just guessing after seeing this movie, how old would you think?
Yeah, I've seen the movie. Yeah, I think, I mean, I just math on what he's done before. I have one guess, but just basing on this off this performance, like 10.
He's 16.
Yeah, that makes more sense age-wise. But yeah.
They might have recorded this thing like 3 years ago.
Yeah, pre-pandy.
Just get it in the can before this kid ages. Because I felt like Room was, that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And this kid's still getting like young child actor roles. That's pretty amazing. You think that well would dry up after like a year and a half, right? but he's still doing it. Still that Little Mermaid check. Yeah, I thought he was good as Luca, too. He's the voice of Luca.
Yeah.
He was, yeah.
So, yeah, I thought the songs, I thought the remade songs were fine. You know, obviously, I'm attached to the originals, but what did you think of McCarthy as Ursula?
Gravity-wise, like, she couldn't fall down in the water. So that takes away one of her moves.
Did so you see she's the already bubbles, working though, with, that were going up the whole time.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. She was fine, you know. I actually thought Javier was worse. Seemed like he didn't really want to be there.
He looked uncomfortable in the water. It was weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was among the not worst singers, but like worst performers in the movie, but yeah. It seems like he didn't screen test or anything for it. They were just like, oh, we can get Javier Bardem? And then they got there. They're like, oh, this is weird.
He has a weird vibe for this, I feel like.
Yeah.
I don't, it's like, you can't not see.
Yeah. And it was weird he wore the Anton wig in the water.
Yeah. I don't even know how that.
How to keep a chili bowl.
Air gun works underwater.
But. Yeah. God knows the coin flip doesn't, but.
Yeah. Just executing barracudas left and right. I don't know. It's kind
of
weird.
And I don't like, I've decided, I think Hamilton's one of the best pieces of work in any medium of the last 15 years. It's great. It serves all the accolades. It's a really inventive, cool thing. I hate everything that's come after it. Like that's inspired it. Unless it's in that setting, it's so corny. Everything he does.
The Lin-Manuel song.
Yeah, like just the stuff he writes. I hate it so much outside of that little...
No, you're a big marimbas guy. You've got marimbas, a room of marimbas in your house.
Yes.
You wake up in marimba and bongo.
Paul Simon comes over and we bongo and marimba until we pass out.
I'm with you. Yeah, it's all underwhelming. It's like when you see his name, it's like, oh, Lin-Manuel's doing the songs? This can be great. And then, Brian, I want you to sing... your favorite new song from the movie right now. Go.
That doesn't
exist. You can't do it.
Eric had that one song, I guess, was new.
Yeah. That was
I didn't mind the Awkwafina rap, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Oh, God.
We can't be friends anymore.
I'll remember that.
No.
Yeah.
I know.
Coming to you on vinyl.
Sorry. I'm not saying I changed it to my ringtone.
No, but it is now. We will do that.
Awkwafina occupies this weird space where, for me, when I see her name... And I like think of what the voice is going to be. I'm like, ugh, I don't know if I can do this. And then she comes on screen, or her animated character comes on screen. I'm like, I kind of like this. I'm okay.
Yeah.
I commend her for not annoying me, because it seems like,
well, that name is absurd. Annoy me. It pre-annoys me. Yeah. You see the word Awkwafina.
100%, especially in a world where BoJack Horseman exists and they, you know, did Awkwafina.
Fair.
But I commend her for not.
Could be worth it. Could be Dasani.
It could be, yeah.
Big Ozarka guy.
But not Deja Blue.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Can't go that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, look, the songs are obviously a massive part of this whole thing. I think these original songs are incredible. Like just top tier.
Oh, yeah, they are, man.
Disney songs. Little Mermaid, this whole era.
Little Mermaid goes, man.
Yeah,
like the OG,
it kills. It's great. And some of these, I think, are close to maybe even touching better, and some of them aren't. I thought that, like, I was just, it may have been theater, because that I know that's a huge part of seeing a movie now, is like you never know when you're gonna catch a theater that has crappy speakers that day or whatever. I thought the mix was too low on the music. Honestly, mm-hmm. I was expecting. Some of the music elements, not just, I don't mean just the sing, I mean the instrumentation and all that sort of stuff,
to be
the
better.
Sound part of it.
To be richer. Lot, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought with you. The arrangements weren't on the par of the original. You know, I don't know if that's like, we need to pull it back and like hear the vocals more or something, but mm-hmm. I'm with you. The songs didn't have the punch that they had in the original. The one for me that really hit in the original when I was younger was the Kiss the Girl song. Uh-huh. That I thought mm-hmm. was such a, like a pretty song.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work in this movie nearly as well.
That was the number one to me where I felt like I liked V. Diggs' performance. Sebastian was really good.
I thought he was the best side character, for sure. He was.
Sure. And I liked his vocal stuff more than I did the original Little Mermaid, but the but that is the that song is the one more than anywhere else where I felt like the sound mix was honestly was bad. It was just too low, and it wasn't. I thought that should have you should feel like you should feel like the crab is speaking into your ear, and the music is like really coming at you and like sort of pushing in that direction. Yeah. And it didn't have that at all. And I was very that was like one of those things that. You know, we get in the car and Lindsay's like, I love that. What did you think? And I was like, it was fine. I liked it. Fine enough. You know, here's some things I really like. And she says, what do you not like? And I was like, and I started listing off all these technical things that usually, to be honest, I mean, anybody who listens to this show knows I don't really notice those things all that frequently. It was pretty obvious, unfortunately, like some of the technical problems. And that annoyed me. Like, and that was a big one. And that song in particular, I'm like, come on, guys. Like,
yeah.
Let's get this mix going a little bit because this is a great song. Like we gotta, and it's a song that we all know too. And there's something about I don't know. I was disappointed on that front.
I'm with you. So Disney has tried to make original blockbuster live action movies before. Does anyone remember Tomorrowland? I didn't think so.
Right. Yeah,
it flopped. Remember John Carter? Yeah. No, it flopped as well. So, I hear you that you want new original stuff, but they've tried it and it just hasn't worked. There's not like a lot of proof in the pudding, so to speak, for them to really go in that direction. So that's a little disappointing. Did you guys see the end credits scene? Did you stay past the credits?
No, I didn't.
I didn't think there was one.
Oh, no. It's Remy from Ratatouille. He's cooking up a nice little garlic Parmesan flounder. So I think they're gonna cross this over dark. With a live action Ratatouille or something. Yeah. Kind of morbid, but like
kids gotta know.
But it's not like cool Disney, you know, modern animal animation. It's the rat robot from the first Ninja Turtles. He looks rough.
Yeah.
Splinter.
Yeah,
it looks like the Pete Davidson weasel in Suicide Squad. Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't have to fillet flounder while he was still alive either. Like that was too much for the kids. But hey, it's post credits, you know, kind of a little bonus. All right, let's hit a grade here for this one. I thought Halle Bailey's singing was kind of what redeemed this from being a total disaster, in my opinion.
She can't be named Halle Bailey though, right? We have to do something about this.
Right, Halle Berry, right.
Right, it's just, yeah. It'd be like if there was a new, hot, young, great actor and his name was George Clooney. We'd be like, you gotta...
George Clooney. One of you's gotta change your name. Yeah. You can fight for it, but yeah. Somebody's...
I'm not doing both. I'm not gonna mess... I'm gonna mess that up a million times. Can we just get out of this?
Right.
I mess it up with her sister, Chloe, already. That's even more confusing. Yeah, she's a twin, right?
For sure.
Okay, I thought she was great, and what redeemed it from being a total disaster. This was my favorite one probably since, I don't know, I liked Peter Pan and Wendy, but that doesn't count. Since the theatrical ones, probably my favorite one since, I don't know, the Jungle Book, maybe?
Mm.
Didn't like Aladdin, didn't like The Lion King or Beauty and the Beast, so I'm going to give this one a B-. Brian, what about you?
I'm a little higher. I think she's great. We probably didn't talk enough about her. The vocal stuff was incredible. She was a good enough actress too. And I think that is maybe that's all you're looking for in some ways. I mean, I don't think she was like a great intuitive actress, but maybe that will come. But more importantly, it's the vocal side of it. And she crushed it. So love that. I thought some of the side characters were fine and fun enough. It's the Rob Marshall effect to me, guys. Like, I just think he is such a hack. And so anytime
Oscar,
I'll put it this way. I kind of forgotten that he was the director of this. And I like 10 minutes in, I was like, gosh, it's a really weird directorial choice. I don't even remember exactly what I was thinking. I was like, gosh, this is just kind of lame directory wise It's like, who directed? And then I remember, oh, it's freaking Rob Marshall. Of course. Like, just such a bum. I don't know. It was a lot of things could have been better here. I feel like if they just would have put somebody behind the camera who has any sort of ambition or artistry. So that's the real holdback for me. But yeah, I mean, I'll go B. I'm right between a B and a B plus. I'll go to B. Richard, what about you?
I'm lower than you guys. The Rob Marshall effect. Some of the stuff is so like corny, cringy, and yeah. So I'm gonna go solid C, not plus or minus, just C.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, there you go. There's Little Mermaid grades. Let's hit a quick
weekly recommend.
What you got for us this week, Richard?
I finally got around to doing. I know you guys both read this, and then I love the documentary, but I finally got around to reading the Meet Me in the Bathroom book.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, really enjoyed it. Good oral history of that whole scene, and definitely has a lot more to it than the doc. So, yep. That's my weekly recommend. Meet Me in the Bathroom by Lizzie Goodman.
I've been on such a Strokes kick, like,
me too,
the past year. Same. And I've always liked the Strokes, you know, bought their records when I was growing up and stuff, but hadn't listened to them consistently probably over the past decade. But like the past year I have, and I've been loving it, man. They're awesome.
I know. They're great. Excited for that new one.
Oh, I am too. Hopefully they get on that sooner rather than later. Another Rick Rubin record. Mm. Not going to suck. All right. What you got, Brian?
I'm going to recommend a book that I've probably recommended before. It's called, it's actually a series, but the first book is Red Rising. So the series is called Red Rising as well. It's a science fiction fantasy. It really might be my favorite series of books at this point. I love these books. I know I recommended a few years ago. There's an original trilogy, Red Rising, Golden Sun, and Morning Star. It's kind of like a combination of like, it's sort of Hunger Games, Game of Thrones, and Dune kind of mixed together. Really well written, by Pierce Brown is the author. Does just a great job of world building and character building and, anyway, the original trilogy came out a few years ago. I loved it. And then he has a sequel trilogy or a quadrilogy maybe that I've not read the first two books in it because I had heard the second book especially ended on a terrible cliffhanger. And I don't want to... I know you guys don't read a lot of fantasy or science fiction. Like the worst thing with the fantasy series is... Some of these books are like 30 hours or 40 hours long. Not this series, but a lot of these, those other like high fantasy series. And it'll be like, all right, it's a 40-hour book and the sequel is 48 hours. And then in 14 years, I'll put out the third one, you know? And just like, oh my God, I don't want to deal with waiting forever to know what happens with this. So the third book in the sequel series comes out this summer, like late July, I think. So I started doing a reread of this series and I love it. It's just so good. And I know a lot of listeners have heard me in the past and read the book afterwards. And so if you're new and you don't know, definitely if you're into that kind of, if you're into sci-fi or fantasy at all, I like that. This is probably the third time I've read through and I like it more every time. It's so good. So Red Rising is the series by Pierce Brown. Check that out.
Cool. What about you, Kent?
I'm going to recommend a movie. And it's kind of a two-part recommend. I've been reading the Cinema Speculation, the Tarantino book.
Nice, yeah.
But I started reading it. I got a few chapters in. I'm like, I want to watch the movies and then read the chapters, right? Because I want to have a frame of reference for everything he's talking about here. And so I've been watching the movie, then read the chapter, then watch the movie, then read the chapter. Because It's kind of broken up that way. I've been loving it. So definitely recommend doing that if you read the Tarantino book. But I'm going to recommend one of the movies he talks about, The Getaway. From 1972, stars Steve McQueen, Ally McGraw. It's kind of a heist, kind of a Bonnie and Clyde type story. Sam Peckinpah directed it, who also brought us The Wild Bunch. So great little crime thriller from the early 70s that is worth your time. And also the book, read the chapter on it and all that. But yeah, man, loving it so far.
Awesome. That's great.
So many movies out there, man. There's just so many great, there's so much content. I don't know how anyone could be upset with content right now. I mean, there's so much like stuff to go back and watch. I mean, even for us who watch 1,000 movies a year, I mean, I'm still finding new stuff. So check that one out for you. The Getaway.
Awesome.
All right.
Steve McQueen movies.
Dude, he is. He doesn't even speak. He might have 5 lines in the movie. He's just the most, like, camera loves him, king of cool type guy of all time. Just so cool. All right.
We're doing a Bullet throwback.
Are we?
Looking forward to
that. He talks about that. There's a chapter on that as well. I can't remember.
Yeah. Bullet rules.
Bullet is greatness. There's Dirty Harry chapter. There's one on Deliverance, which I just watched recently. It's probably worth an episode at some point, too. But yeah, The Getaway. Check it out. All right, there you go. There's Weekly Recommends and some Little Mermaid talk for you. We'll be back next week talking Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Cool. So stay tuned for that and see it this weekend. We'll see you next time at the cinema, and we'll talk Godzilla in the VIP. See you later. Bye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again. We'll be right back.